The fifth illusion, the illusion of requirement, may be used to experience that there is nothing you have to do to know and experience who you really are. Only by doing those things that you imagine you are required to do to make life work can you come to a complete knowing that none of it is necessary. Ask those among you who are very old. Ask those who have danced the dance and toed the line and obeyed the rules. They will give you their advice in three words. Disobey the rules. They will not hesitate about this. Their counsel will be quick and clear. Color outside the lines. Don't be afraid. Listen to your heart. Don't let anyone tell you what to do. At the end of your life, you will know that nothing you have done will matter, only who you have been while you have done it. Have you been happy? Have you been kind? Have you been gracious? Have you been caring and compassionate and considerate of others? Have you been generous and sharing and, most of all, have you been loving? You will see that it is who you have been, not what you have done, that matters to your soul. And you will see that it is your soul, after all, that is who you are. Yet the illusion of requirement, the idea that there are things you must do, can serve to motivate your mind while you are with your body. It is useful as long as you understand at some level that it is an illusion and that nobody has to do anything that they don't want to do. For most people, this truth is both incredibly freeing and incredibly frightening. The fear is that if human beings were really allowed to do only what they wanted to do, nothing that truly needs to be done would ever get done. Who would take the garbage out? Seriously? Who would do the things that nobody wants to do? That is the question. That is the fear. Humans believe that, left to their own devices, people would not do what needs to be done to keep life going. That fear is unfounded. Humans who would be discovered are pretty wonderful beings. And in a community where there were no rules, no regulations, and no requirements, there would still be plenty of people who would do the things that need to be done. In fact, there would be very few who would not, for they would be uncomfortable being known as non-contributors. And that is what would change if there were no rules, regulations, or requirements. What would change is not what is being done, but why it is being done. The why of doing would be altered. Instead of doing things because they are told they must, humans would do what they do because they choose to, as an expression of who they are. This is, in truth, the only reason to do anything. But it reverses the entire doing-being paradigm. The way humans have constructed the paradigm, one does something, and then one is something. Under the new paradigm, one is something, and then one does something. One is happy, and then one does what a happy person does. One is responsible, and then one does what a responsible person does. One is kind, and then one does what a kind person does. One does not do responsible things in order to be responsible. One does not do kind things in order to be kind. This only leads to resentment. After all I've done, because it assumes that all the doing will be rewarded. And that is precisely what you have deemed the purpose of heaven. Heaven has been held out as your eternal reward for all the things you have done while on earth, and for not doing the things you were not supposed to do. So you've decided that there must also be a place for people who have not done good things, or have done things they were not supposed to do. You've called this place hell. I come to tell you this, there is no such place as hell. Hell is a state of being. It is the experience of separation from God, an imagining that you are separate from your very self and cannot be reunited. Hell is forever trying to find yourself. What you have called heaven, too, is a state of being. It is the experience of oneness, the ecstasy of reunification with all that is. It is the knowing of the true self. There are no requirements for heaven. That is because heaven is not a place that you get to. It is a place that you are in, always. Yet you can be in heaven, oneness with all, and not know it. Indeed, most of you are. This can be changed, but not by something you are doing. It can only be changed by something that you are being. This is what is meant by, there is nothing you have to do. There is nothing to do but be. And there is nothing to be but one. The amazing thing is that when you are being one with everything, you wind up doing all the things you thought you had to do in order to receive the reward you thought you had to work so hard to receive. It becomes your natural will to do to and for others only those things that you would do to and for yourself. And you would not do to others what you would not want done to you. When you are being one, you are realizing, that is, making real, the idea that there is no other. Yet even being one is not required. You cannot be required to be what you already are. If you have blue eyes, nobody can make you have blue eyes. If you are 6 feet tall, no one can force you to be 6 feet tall. And if you are one with everything, you cannot be required to be. Therefore, there is no such thing as requirement. Requirement does not exist. Who would do the requiring? And of whom would it be required? There is only God. I am that I am. And there is nothing else that is. Use the illusion of requirement to notice that there can be nothing that is truly required. You cannot know and experience freedom from requirement if you have nothing but freedom from requirement. You will seek to imagine, therefore, that certain things are required of you. This you have done very well. You have created a God who demands perfection of you, and who requires you to come to him in only a certain way, through particular rituals, all of which are carefully prescribed. You must say the exact and perfect words, do the exact and perfect things. You must live in a particular way. Having created the illusion that such requirements exist in order to acquire my love, you are now beginning to experience the indescribable joy of knowing that none of this is necessary. You will notice this by observing that rewards often come to people on earth whether they do what they are supposed to do or not. The same is true of what you imagine your rewards to be in your afterlife. Yet your experience in the afterlife is not a reward, it is an outcome. It is the natural result of a natural process called life. When you become clear about this, you will understand free will at last. In that moment, you'll know that your true nature is freedom. You'll never again confuse love with requirement. For true love requires nothing. Always remember that. True love requires nothing.
The sixth illusion, the illusion of judgment, may be used to experience the wonder of a non-judgmental you and a non-judgmental God. You have chosen to create the experience of judgment in order to experience the wonder of a non-judgmental God, and to understand that judgment is utterly impossible in God's world. Only through feeling the sadness and the destruction of judgment yourself could you truly know that it is not something that love could ever sponsor. It is when other people judge you that you know this most keenly, for nothing hurts more than judgment. Judgment hurts deeply when those who judge you are wrong, yet it hurts even more deeply when they are right. This is when the judgment of others cuts to the quick, tearing at the fabric of the soul. You have only to experience this once to know that judgment is never a product of love. In creating your illusory world, you have produced societies in which judgment is not only accepted, but expected. You have even created an entire system of what you call justice around this idea that someone else can judge you to be guilty or innocent. I tell you this, no one is ever guilty, and everyone is forever innocent in the eyes of God. That is because my eyes see more than yours. My eyes see why you think things, why you say things, and why you do things. My heart knows that you have merely misunderstood. I have inspired it to be said, no one does anything inappropriate given their model of the world. This is a great truth. I have inspired it to be said, guilt and fear are the only enemies of man. That is a great truth. In highly evolved societies, no members of those societies are ever judged and found guilty of anything. They are simply observed to have done something, and the outcome of their actions, the impact of them, is made clear to them. Then they are allowed to decide what, if anything, they wish to do with regard to that. And others in the society are likewise allowed to decide what, if anything, they wish to do to and for themselves with regard to that. They do nothing to another. The idea of punishment is simply not something that occurs to them, because the concept of punishment itself is incomprehensible to them. Why would the one being want to hurt itself? Even if it has done something that's damaging, why would it want to hurt itself again? How does hurting itself once more correct the damage of the first hurt? It's like stubbing one's toe, then kicking twice as hard to retaliate. Of course, in a society that does not see itself as one, and does not see itself as one with God, this analogy would not make much sense. In such a society, judgment would make perfect sense. Judgment is not the same as observation. An observation is a simple looking, a simple seeing of what is so. Judgment, on the other hand, is a concluding that something else must be so because of what is observed. Observing is witnessing. Judging is concluding. It is adding a therefore to the sentence. In fact, it becomes a sentence, often handed down without mercy. Judgment sears the soul, for it brands the spirit with an illusion of who you are, ignoring the deeper reality. I will never judge you, ever, because even if you have done a certain thing, my observation of that would be a simple seeing of what's so. I would draw no conclusions about who you are. It is, in fact, impossible to draw conclusions about who you are, because in your creation of yourself, you are never concluded. You are a work in progress. You are not finished creating you, and you never will be. You are never who you were in the last moment, and I never see you as that, but rather as who you now choose to be. I have inspired others to describe it this way. You are continually creating yourself from the field of infinite possibilities. You are constantly recreating yourself anew in the next grandest version of the greatest vision ever you held about who you are. You are, in every moment, born again, and so is everyone else. In the moment you understand this, you will see that judging yourself, or judging another, is pointless, because that which you would judge has ceased to be, even as you are judging it. It has come to a conclusion, even as you are coming to your own conclusions. In that moment you will relinquish forever your idea of a judging God, for you will know that love could never judge. As your awareness increases, you will comprehend the full impact of the truth that self-creation never ends. Always remember that. Self-creation never ends.